Well, journalist Dan Fagan knows a little something about industrial pollutants in rivers. In his Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Tom's River, Fagan uses history, personal narrative, health data, and investigative journalism to tell the story of a small town's long struggle with chemical pollution, which led to one of the largest settlements for toxic dumping in the U.S. Fagan will be in Pittsburgh on September 7th. I spoke with him by phone about the book and what we can learn now from Tom's River. Tom's River was a small town and river, literally a backwater, you say in the book, near the Jersey Shore. And in the 1950s, the chemical dye manufacturing industry set up shop there. So for people who haven't read the book, can you describe what happened next?
Yeah, well, you set it up really well. I originally set out to write a book about, you know, this particular factory in a particular town and the environmental consequences thereof. But what I discovered is that, you know, there's much more to the story. By the time the chemical industry came to Tom's River, there had been more than a century of experience, very bad environmental experience, in terms of polluting drinking water and also air emissions from these dye plants. And sure enough, that's what happened in Tom's River, too. The first thing that was contaminated were the chemical plant's own water wells. But instead of fixing the problem in a fundamental way by improving pollution control, they simply relocated their wells and just kind of took no notice of the fact that these chemical pollutants were seeping toward the main water supply wells, the public water supply wells of the entire town. And it's, you know, to this day, we don't really know what all was in that wastewater. But certainly it was enough to have some significant toxic effects on wildlife and also on the people who drank that water.
SIBA, the dye manufacturer, which became Tom's River Chemical and eventually produced other chemicals there out of really hazardous materials, originally operated in the U.S. on the Ohio River in Cincinnati. And in some ways, it's a familiar story, you know, a polluting industry and the environmental and health consequences for people who live nearby. How is Tom's River unique, and how is it similar to other places in the country that have, you know, industrial polluters?
I actually think it's quite similar to many other places. I mean, one of the truly unusual things about Tom's River is that we really know what happened now, because there was so much elaborate study both of the pollution and of the health effects of that pollution. And in most other places, we don't know that. However, on the Ohio River, where this particular operation was before it moved to Tom's River, we also have really excellent and really shocking documentation of the extent of the pollution and also the extent of the cancer clusters among employees of Cincinnati Chemical. And yes, they moved to Tom's River because they wanted a place that was relatively isolated, where it would be, there would not be a lot of people sort of poking around and seeing what was going on. And they also needed a place where there was sandy soil, because the big advantage of sandy soil is that if you dump liquid on sandy soil, it quote unquote disappears. Of course, it doesn't really disappear.
Eventually, over the course of several decades, some people did start to question the chemical company. They went around those types of inquiry by, I think eventually they started piping the waste directly into the ocean. How did what they were doing and become public knowledge? How was that investigated and brought to light?
You know, the first way that it came to light was that some people, relatively small number of people, were concerned about the construction of that waste pipeline that you mentioned, to move it out to the ocean. And they start asking questions, why is this pipeline necessary? And a few of them actually discovered that it was because the public drinking water wells at Tom's River had been affected by this contamination. But the chemical company and the water company did a very good job of keeping the lid on that information. They were very vague and really misleading about what had actually happened to the public water supply. And it's one thing for the chemical company to do that, but in this case, the water company did it as well. So this pipeline was built, and then there was a leak in that pipeline a few years later, and that caused more people to ask questions. And then really in the 80s and 90s, when concerns about cancer clusters among employees and especially among children in the town became more prominent, concern began to grow. But what I found was truly shocking was that this process took so long. And there were so many people in town that were willing to just ride the wave. And the chemical company did a lot in the short run economically for Toms River. These were well-paying jobs. And it was really a place of upward economic mobility, upward social mobility, where these folks thought they were living the American dream. And even though there were clear indications that there was a dark side to what was happening, many people chose not to pay attention.
The book is really beautifully written. It's like it's a real pleasure to read. It almost reads like a novel. You sort of set up this side-by-side story right at the beginning of the history of chemical dye manufacturing and the rise of chemical companies, and then the history and practice of epidemiology, looking at the incidence of disease over a population. In Toms River, there were a number of cases of childhood cancers, as you mentioned, leukemia. Why was it and why is it still so hard to prove a relationship between toxic waste, pollution, and cancers of people living nearby chemical plants or industrial plants?
Well, this is a crucial question, and it turns out this is a sort of a saga that, you know, people have tried to sort of unpack this complicated relationship between environmental exposure and chronic diseases, especially cancer, you know, since ancient times. And it turns out it's really hard to do for multiple reasons. You know, the simplest reason is that in most cases, diseases have multiple causes. Cancer, which isn't even one disease, it's more than 150, and the number's growing all the time, depending on how you want to define disease. Almost all cancers have multiple causes and actually often require multiple triggering events, usually some kind of multiple genetic mutations. And then most cancers have very long latency periods. Sometimes years can pass between the initial triggering event and the actual diagnosis of some type of cancer. On the other hand, epidemiology is fascinating to me. It's really fascinating scientific detective work. And epidemiology is the primary tool that's used along with toxicology to try to understand what has happened. And it turns out that epidemiology is both a weak tool and also a powerful tool. It's weak in the sense that it tells us only about probabilities, not certainties. We can almost never go back in time and say with certainty what the cause of a particular case of a chronic disease like cancer was. On the other hand, we can look at an aggregation of cases and use some really sound statistical methods and speak with high confidence that a particular grouping of cases was not a fluke, was not just a matter of chance, but was almost certainly triggered by particular exposures. It's very difficult to do, but it can be done. And sure enough, that's what happened in Toms River.
Toms River Chemical engaged in some really underhanded practices as they polluted the waterways there in New Jersey and they covered it up. But you point out in the book that even the legal limits for waste they were releasing wouldn't be allowed now by EPA. That was a very different time. But is there a modern parallel?
Yeah, I think there certainly are plenty of modern parallels. Yes, many of the things, not all, many of the things that Toms River Chemical did were legal at the time. Some things they did were not legal, and there were both civil and criminal prosecutions of the company. Of course, it was a different time, and of course, environmental laws were more lax than they are now. We know much more now about this relationship between chemical exposures and public health. I think it's also quite relevant in places where regulation is still relatively lax. Folks who read the book know that the last chapter I go to China, which is really where the new Toms Rivers are. China now absolutely dominates the global chemical manufacturing industry. And sure enough, in China, many of the same mistakes and the same sort of civic movements to sort of try to understand the consequences of this manufacturing, that many of the same things that happened in Toms River and are now happening in China. And then finally, I think it's quite relevant to this current debate that we're having in the United States. I don't even know if I would call it a debate, but it's certainly a talking point among our current president, Donald Trump, and among many Republicans, that environmental regulation is a drag on economic growth. Toms River shows, you know, what the consequences of that can be. I mean, the folks, residents of Toms River, turned a blind eye to what was happening in their town because they wanted to enjoy the consequences of growth. In the long run, many of them came to regret it. They certainly regret it now, and they take a very different attitude in Toms River now. There's also really good data showing that communities that have the best economic growth, where unemployment is lowest, also tend to have the broadest economic base. They are not dependent on manufacturing. And certainly Pittsburgh is a fantastic example of that. Pittsburgh has done an absolutely great job of diversifying its economy. It's a tech hub. It's a hub for healthcare. It's really kind of a shining example of what it means to have a diverse economic base and how much more resilient communities are if they are able to expand beyond manufacturing.
What's Toms River like now?
Toms River is a very nice town, despite what you might think if you read my book. People in Toms River are so attuned to environmental health, in part because of everything that they went through associated with the cancer cluster. Citizens are quite well informed, and the water company and businesses in town are really quite scrupulous about making sure that they follow environmental rules. So there's no reason that anyone should feel concerned about living in Toms River. The important thing is to learn the lessons of what happened in Toms River and to apply those lessons to communities across the country and around the world.
Well, thank you so much.
It was a pleasure to talk to you, Karen.
Dan Fagan is a journalism professor at New York University and director of the Science, Health, and Environmental Reporting Program there. He's also the author of the Pulitzer Prize-winning Toms River. Point Park University's Environmental Journalism Program is bringing Dan Fagan to Pittsburgh on September 7th for a talk and book signing. And there's more about that at our website, alleghenyfront.org. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapple.